What up, y'all? You're listening to the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk Podcast with your hosts, Thomas Miller
and Corey Adair,
your go-to podcast for gambling on soccer and hot, hot, hot U.S. men's national team takes. Take it away. Go, go, USA!
Gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey is denied again, but Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Certainly through! Oh, it's incredible!
And welcome to the Gabacho Borracho Soccer Talk Podcast. And we're discussing the host cities for the World Cup in 2026 to start this off. And somehow, 32 years later, we've still got a World Cup site in the middle of nowhere, Massachusetts. I don't know how that even is possible. But anyway, we've got plenty to unpack. I'm Dan Angel, joined by Thomas Miller and Corey Adair. Gentlemen, your thoughts on anything?
Well, Thomas is recording from outside, so this is gonna be interesting. This is gonna be fun.
Which still makes more sense than having a World Cup match in Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Real quick. What is it like? 64? Is it even 60,000?
It's like a 70,000 seat stadium, but that's not the issue. The issue is getting to and from that stadium, because it's like 30 miles outside of Boston. Like, I've actually been to a Patriots playoff game there, and there's only one road in and out of that stadium. Like, getting in and out of Foxborough is an absolute nightmare. And even when you get out of it, you're still a good distance away from Boston. So it makes no sense that we're still playing there 32 years later.
I'll be honest. I thought for sure they'd give Canada one more place, and I thought it'd be Montreal, and I didn't think it'd be Boston. Like, I thought for sure it'd be Montreal, but you know,
right.
It's a little weird. I think that going back to a traditional schedule when it comes to the World Cup, playing in the middle of the summer, is something that's going to be very interesting and very unique when you're playing across this vast of an area. There is a lot of different places. I mean, in the middle of July or June, Kansas City alone can knock somebody out with a heat stroke. I mean, it's not crazy to think about. That's a fully outdoor one. I know Miami has a little bit of, it makes it a little bit more friendly for the players, but it's still Miami in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
And is indoors, so that kind of helps, but they said Dallas. Did they say Houston?
Yeah, they did say Houston.
Houston's indoors too, right?
Houston's got a retractable roof. Yep.
Yep. So yeah, Kansas City will be interesting depending on what type of weather they get. That Miami one though, that's I'm marking that on my calendar, because if Norway has to play,
Miami is the Manaus of our World Cup. Like, yes. 2014, it's gonna be the same thing.
Yeah. And just with TV stuff, I mean, there will be day games. You know, they can't play these games at night. Otherwise, it would be, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning in Europe. So, Yeah, we're looking at even SoFi. I mean, LA, if it's a day game, if it's 2 p.m. Pacific time, they're the same sort of thing where they got that awning or whatever you want to call it over the fans. Stadium will be drenched in the sun. I mean,
I'm going to check that. I think that stadium is fully retractable roof.
Which one?
They had a lightning delay on a Monday Night Football game. One time this year at SoFi. I know it's like underground. Like, the street level is the top level. It's like Carver Hawkeye Arena or something like that. I think Notre Dame's football stadium is the same way. But, yeah, I mean, that might help a little bit. But I know they had a lightning delay in a Monday Night Football game.
Let's see.
And yeah, I am recording outside, and what makes it even more crazy is I'm recording in the front yard instead of the backyard.
Yeah, because his backyard has a privacy fence around most of it, except for that little driveway to get into his house. So he can just tuck up in that fence. Nobody's going to see him, but he's out front. I mean, at some point, if you do this multiple weeks in a row, your chances of something something you don't want to happen goes up exponentially the more minutes that you sit out there and record at this time of day in the summertime. Just telling you, Thomas, like, you might want to.
All right. So SoFi, there is a roof over the field, but the sides of the stadium are open. So it's a really weird setup, which confused the heck out of the Raiders when they had that lightning delay.
Right.
So the pitch will be covered.
Yeah, but there's climate control. It has climate control.
Yeah.
Main. Most of the stadiums that they picked had climate control. So that was obviously a selling point because of how bad our summers get. But a couple of them aren't, and a couple of those places that aren't, that could get pretty sketchy.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry for some of these people.
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't not put one in Miami with how that stadium has remade itself as a soccer friendly facility, but they also did leave Washington out, which they very well should have. I mean, that bid was just a cluster muck from the beginning.
And I think one of my takes on it is that this is a big time fuck up by leadership in Chicago. Like, you can't, like, anytime you get a big event with this much tourism and this much influx in cash, you need to do what you need to do to get a bid on that. Like, you need to, if you have the facilities, even if you have to fix them up a little bit, like, you need to do that.
Right.
It's the biggest city in the Midwest. Like, that's like, it's a hub of sports even. So for them not to do whatever it took to get that bid, I know, you know, you could make arguments as why you wouldn't want to go there, whatever. Like, it still should have fought tooth and nail to get one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Chicago thinks that they don't need to worry about playing by FIFA's rules because they're big enough that they're going to get huge amounts of people to come there no matter what's going on. But you're right. I mean, having the World Cup there would be absolutely huge, like, no matter what city you are.
Especially if you already have the infrastructure built. That's the difference between North America, say, and some of these places that they've gone recently, you know, South America, even Brazil, let alone Qatar. You know, we have full infrastructure. It would take minimal renovation by multiple stadiums, and we could host 80 games easily amongst 15 different locations in this country if we needed to. We have like a third amount of massive fucking stadiums that are big enough to play a soccer game on.
I mean, we have a ridiculous amount of stadiums. Hell, like, Lincoln, Nebraska could absolutely host a World Cup match because, I mean, Memorial Stadium could work, and you know damn well that some Husker fans would actually fill it.
Oh, Nebraska fans would, yeah, take that and go buy some type of flag material to wear.
Yeah.
They would, like, turn it into this, like, nationalism thing and just show up and be like, well, if you're going to take our stadium from us, we're going to go ahead and outdo you. Go USA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we could put on a World Cup here every 2 years and sell every stadium that it goes to. I actually saw an article about college football stadiums that could host soccer games, and they brought up Memorial.
The top 10 in the world.
They brought up Memorial because of they would have a wall like Borussia Dortmund Stadium behind one of the goals, because the end zone is so high at Memorial Stadium, I believe, on, I don't know, south and north and one of them, but it would just be, it'd be really similar to what you see at Dortmund Stadium, where it's just this wall of people.
Sure.
And yeah, and I was like, when I read that story, I was like, did Corey write this story? Like, why am I?
In all honesty, Lincoln Stadium reminds me of like a mini Arrowhead.
Yeah.
Where like it just does this.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, it's a fantastic place to watch a game.
Yeah. I think it's a cathedral. I just, it's beautiful. I'm sorry. Like, every time I drive up on it, I'm just like, that is a nice, it's a nice looking stadium. It's like old school looking, classic, just.
No, it's a great stadium. I've been there twice and absolutely loved it. I would like to actually hear how it sounds from where the fans sit.
Oh, it shakes.
Because in the press box it's soundproof. So it's loud enough to get through, but it comes at you as like a very dull roar so that you can hear the Nebraska media relations team.
But you can feel it, can't you? Like you can feel the physical.
Not really.
Not
up there. I mean, granted, it could be because one of those games was when Missouri was really, really good and Nebraska was really, really not.
Yeah, you wouldn't have gotten it then. What was the other game?
They were both, like, both times that I've been to Lincoln was covering Missouri.
And Missouri ran away with it both times?
No, Missouri ran away with it once, and the other, Nebraska won, but nobody was that excited about Nebraska because that was the ill-fated Bill Callahan era.
Yep. So yeah, you haven't seen peak.
Sure.
You know, like the best one that I've been to was that first Scott Frost game when we played.
Well, yeah, that would do it.
You know, Akron got canceled, and then Colorado came to town.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen a 2:30 game feel like a night game like that in my life.
Oh, yeah, I mean Scott Frost and Colorado. I mean, that's all you need right there for something huge in Lincoln.
Yeah, it got to the point where, like, you could feel, like, the whole earth was shaking. You couldn't hear any, like, it was just that it was the loudest thing I've ever heard. And I remember, like, screaming as loud as I can, and I look over at Laura, and she's just sitting there, like,
nice.
And then I tap her, and she looks up at me, and I was like, dude, yell. And just, what's going on right now? It's like, these people are fucking crazy.
Yep.
No, I think it'd be fun to have a, I don't know, you'd have to pick the right match. It'd have to be like a rivalry match where the tourists that you get coming in create that type of environment, that type of noise in a stadium like that. Like, you got to have people cheering in unison.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm super excited to see what matches they put in Kansas City, because I think that's my personal top architecturally, like, design stadium for sound. I love Autzen. I think Autzen's a great design. Seattle's a great design. Kansas City for me is my personal number one.
Yeah. I mean, one match that I think, like, looking at the map that I think could go to Kansas City is the second group stage game in Canada's group. Because they've got to find a way to make this travel work. Because with only two stadiums in Canada, I mean, they're not going to send Canada onto American soil for its second group stage match. That's just not going to work. So
all three in fucking Toronto, or two in one and one in the other, and fly.
So what I think, like, thinking about it, what I think might happen is Canada plays their first match in Toronto. Canada then plays their second match in Vancouver like 10 days later. And A2 and A3 play in Kansas City, because that's the best way that you can actually split up the travel so that you only have the two other teams are only flying across half the country as opposed to the whole dang continent.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I was assuming too, that they're gonna, I mean, if you're playing your first game in LA, you're not gonna go, you know, too far east.
Well, they specifically talked about it being three different regions.
Right.
Yeah. No, I know. But, like, for Canada's group, they have to make some kind of exception, because the only other option is to have them play both their games in Toronto or both their games in Vancouver. Because when they drew out the schedule, they had it set up so that Canada and Mexico would not leave their home countries until the quarterfinals if they won their group.
Yeah.
I'm beyond fucking stoked. This is amazing, because it feels like everything is coming to fruition. You know, everybody talked about how 94 soccer was literally infant status in this country forever. Like, there, it was so small. That World Cup is what kind of created the place that we're at now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, the amount of people that brought in, that group of people brought in even more in the next generation, in the next, and now we're here.
Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun watching that 94 World Cup.
See, and I don't remember it, because I don't remember any World Cup before 2010. So, you know, like, this is
consider yourself lucky that you don't remember 98. I'll just say that.
Yeah. There's a great podcast by Roger Bennett, Men in Blazers, about the 98 USA team.
God.
Complete disaster.
Yeah.
98, 2006.
Disaster on the really pitch disasters. And disaster in my grandmother's house because my father got thrown out.
He got thrown out? Is he being too rowdy?
He got thrown out for swearing at the television when the U.S. went down 2-0 to Iran.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No warning, no strikes, just instant out?
I think there was a warning after like the first half, and then after Iran got the second goal, my grandmother tossed my father out of her house for like the next couple hours. So he wasn't inside the house when the U.S. pulled one back with 3 minutes to go. But yeah, that was an interesting situation for sure.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is like it is all exciting. It's only 4 years from right now.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice to see what it's like hosting the World Cup now that we have actually arrived as a soccer nation. Because, I mean, yeah, 94, it was fun, but, I mean, there were a lot of people in this country who just didn't know much about soccer, didn't care much about soccer, and now it's changed.
94 gives you serious South Africa vibes.
Yeah.
For where we were at in the football world, in the soccer world.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, there were a lot of questions about the U.S. hosting the World Cup in 94 when we got it awarded to us because our national side had done nothing to that point. And a couple months after we got it awarded to us was when Caligiuri scored the goal to get us into the 1990 World Cup, which kind of quieted down the criticism. But before that, the consensus in the soccer community was, what in the world are you going to the United States for? There's no domestic league, and the national team hasn't done anything in 40 years. And now we're at the point where we expect success from the national team. We have a robust domestic league. Granted, people aren't going to be able to watch it much starting next year, but that's another story.
Dude, Apple TV's cheap enough. It's an a la carte item. There's not going to be any people are going to buy it.
We'll see.
We don't need to debate it.
I know. We'll see.
Yeah, it's another aspect of the 2026. Real quick, and we'll talk about Ted Lasso. we'll be a favorite going into it, by the way, too, because regardless of what we do in this World Cup, with the youth of our team, and the wave that we have coming after these guys, and we're about to do a bunch of youth tournaments, by the way, too.
Mm-hmm. We still got a baby Aronson, baby Reyna.
I mean, our best players are 23 years old right now, 22 years old. And I mean, so we'll be a favorite going into it. It's a completely different atmosphere than 94, which ended up being a great World Cup, by the way, too, because, you know, America is so diverse and such a vacation hotspot. You know, you can go to any city and you're going to have nationals from whatever country that are representing there.
Mm-hmm.
Be a weird World Cup too, because we're going to 48 teams, so 16 groups of three.
Yeah, and that's going to be really strange because, A, we're going to be a seeded team, and B, with the expansion, I think they're going to fix it at one European team per group because I think UEFA is going to be up to 16 bids. So, like, how we do in that World Cup is going to be very dependent on who ends up as the seeded team in the group opposite us. Because, like, the only things that we know for sure, we're going to be in Group I, because the bracket's already been set for us, Mexico, and Canada. Canada's been allocated to Group A, Mexico to Group E, and the U.S. to Group I. And see, I think if I remember right, Mexico is on the opposite side of the bracket of both us and Canada. Like, if all of the teams were to win their way to that point in the tournament, the U.S. and Canada would be on course to meet in the semifinals, and Mexico, neither one of us could see until the final. So it'll depend a lot on who the seeds are. Like, hopefully we get somebody who is reasonably beatable in that round of 32 match.
We're going two places in each. Two places in each group.
What do you mean?
Yeah, we're doing. They are so like only one team gets eliminated after.
Yep, only one team falls up at the group stage. And
this you just can't lose. Just don't lose, and you advance. Just don't lose.
Yeah.
Well, don't lose, and don't play out two scoreless draws.
Yeah. Wow. Right.
Score like, don't lose.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they're saying that they might put in penalty shootouts for the group stage to try to create a tiebreaker if they need it, but we'll see what the format ends up being. But just
my opinion, make a goal scored. Incentivize people to score fucking goals.
Oh, I agree. That's absolutely the way they should do it.
By the way, by that point, we could also be at a 2 30-minute halves with the clock stopping anytime the ball's not in play. This has already been experimented in FIFA matches. So that's what FIFA wants to go to, some sort of a USA sport kind of
similar. No, that won't work. MLS tried it in the early 90s. Yeah. It was a complete failure. It pissed off everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want them to touch it. I think
but make goal differential and goals scored important enough to where it incentivizes not losing, but it also incentivizes scoring goals. And you'll be just fine. Like, you're not going to – I don't think you're going to find yourself in too many situations where a far worse team is going to finish last.
We've seen it in Europe where they could do 12 groups of four, first and second place advance, and do 8 third place. When third place in groups of four is in play,
that would make the most sense. But
it makes the final day that much better. We saw it last summer. Yeah,
it does. Great. The problem is that UEFA doesn't want to add that extra match, because if you guarantee every team 3 matches and then you still have 32 teams, then you're playing out 8 matches total as opposed to 7. But I mean, really, that shouldn't be as huge of a deal as it is.
No, especially they moved it to 5 subs. I mean, guys can complain. We saw European guys complaining just this week, these last weeks, about playing 4 games in 10 days or 12 days or whatever after an entire European season. But I mean, come on. Like, that's what we want to see. We want to see games all the time. 12 months a year. Just kill yourself for a bit, please.
Yeah. No, I agree. Groups of four are the way that it should go. Always.
Yeah. It feels too perfect the way it is right now. I mean, it's not like expanding the NCAA tournament from 64 to 68, which is, you know, has been all right. Like, I don't think anybody really hates that. I think there was some resistance towards it at the beginning, right? But like, switching from 32 to 48, and then now we're going back to the 80s when we're doing groups of 3 teams, just, you know, teams will be playing in the same group on the same day. You know, it's going to be weird. And I don't like things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think some of the additions to this tournament are just completely unnecessary. Like, okay, give a spot to Oceania. I get that. I mean, Oceania is going to get killed most likely, but I at least get the idea of giving them a guaranteed spot at the tournament. That's fine. But Asia does not need 8 places.
Yeah. But to FIFA, they do, because there's two spots in this entire world. I mean, excluding Antarctica, I guess. I don't think there's really even population there, but there's two spots in this world where the sport isn't, you know, the biggest sport in the world, and that's India and to a certain extent, China. So yeah, that's what they're trying to do right now, is they're trying to expand. They got all of Africa. They got all of North, South America, Europe, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But now they want to expand to India, where there's a ton of people, and China. And this is what it's all about. This is what the expansion is all about. And
I know, but I mean, you look at some of these teams who might be making it, like Iraq, Oman, Uzbekistan.
Well, you know what? Just give us more cannon fodder. Like, let's go.
I get it. I get it. But the thing I love about the group stage is seeing competitive matches. I mean, you get a couple cannon fodder games in there, but for the most part, most matches are pretty interesting. And seeing some of these lesser countries that really just are not good enough to compete, it's like, it just kind of waters that down a little bit.
Yeah. I'm on that side of it.
Yeah, like, I get that. But I think it creates more potential for Cinderella stories we would never had a chance to see before that.
I mean, it can, but it also creates the possibility for like a United States Thailand in the women's tournament, where the U.S. dropped 13 on Thailand. Nobody needed to see that.
No, but yeah. I mean, it is still everybody's dream to play in the World Cup.
Sure.
So if we, I mean, what is that like? 28 to 30% of countries in the world qualify. That's still a small number.
That's fair.
That's still a small number. Like, I'm okay with this. I'm okay with the expansion on this. It's a world tournament. Give us two more weeks of tournament. It takes a month, and it's once every 4 years, and it doesn't even take up the entire off season. You can extend it out 2 weeks, and I would agree
with that. And like, I am more inclined to be good with expanding it for Africa. Because I mean, African qualification is just so brutal. Like, you get good teams from Africa missing the tournament every 4 years. Like, there's no question that Africa deserves more representation at this tournament. Asia, well, Asia does.
The two teams that made it to the Cup of Nations final had to play against each other, and the winner goes to the World Cup.
Yeah,
that's stupid.
It is.
Just, yeah. Anyways, we'll get, and then they have no, they didn't. If that shit had happened in that World Cup qualifier in Europe, they would have stopped the match. If it happened in North America, they, unless, if it was on U.S. soil, they would
have stopped. Oh, absolutely.
Mexican soil, they stopped the match.
Yeah. Like, I think for me, my biggest oppositions to the expansion are the format of the group stage and them giving as many bids as they are to Asia, because Asia just doesn't feel like it's earned that representation, because Asia has a ridiculously forgiving format and the teams rarely make it out of the group stage from Asia. I mean, Japan and South Korea have had a couple moments, but for the most part, I mean, when was the last time that an Asian team did much of anything?
Yeah, when it wasn't on their home soil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they never have, you know. I mean, same could be said about CONCACAF, and we're going to six, right?
We are, which, oh God.
So we got Guatemala going to the 2026 World Cup.
I think Guatemala might need to go to 16.
Every single CONCACAF nation has home field advantage in that World Cup.
Yeah.
Like,
no, think. I really want to think about this for a second. It doesn't matter what city you play this game in. Say Guatemala qualifies for the World Cup. How many years has it been?
God.
Never.
Okay, cool.
I believe never. I might be wrong.
I'm looking it up.
Even better. Even better. I'm sure there's a handful of million Guatemalans in this country that will happily get their happy asses to whatever stadium it's going to be.
Yeah.
And get those tickets. And good night, because these stadiums are designed to make noise, and you just filled it with a bunch of people that live in the United States that have the easiest travel and book this shit early.
Yeah.
I mean, the one exception to that would be if a CONCACAF nation is playing against a CONMEBOL nation. If you're playing like Brazil in Miami, you're screwed.
You're screwed.
Granted, if you're playing Brazil anywhere, you're screwed, but fan-wise, you're screwed there.
New York, New Jersey, too. That's same sort of situation. Also, playing a game in Mexico. If Mexico has pretty strict immigration laws, so no Central American. I mean, they're really not going to have a ton of representation at those games if they were to play in Monterrey or Mexico City,
Right. I mean, I think they're going to have to be a little lax with that dumb for those matches, but yeah, that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
I think they'll try to be strategic about that. If there's a CONCACAF nation where there isn't as many, people, maybe that's the one that goes to Mexico.
But there's nothing they can do about that. The matches will be determined in advance, the locations.
We got to wait another 4 years. Yeah.
I know. I am really intrigued to see what this CONCACAF foam octagonal or what the format is going to look like for the other nations qualifying this time. Because, I mean, with us, Mexico and Canada all out of the qualification process, these small nations are going to be revving up for this because they're thinking this is our shot to get to the World Cup. We might never get them. We're never going to get as good of a chance as this because we don't have to worry about going to Mexico or the U.S.
Yeah, I would say it's wide ass open.
Echo.
Panama and Costa Rica, they're both kind of aged out. They've been two of the representatives. I mean, Costa Rica will go again, but I mean, they're gonna field one of the older teams in the entire tournament this year.
Yep.
Panama's the same thing. They didn't really replace their older guys. Jamaica is another example where they used a lot of older guys. And I mean, yeah, so I think it's just wide open for three spots. But, you could see any team really get in there. El Salvador is probably,
It'll be fully entertaining. It'll be very CONCACAF-y and entertaining.
Yeah. we're going to have some fun watching that.
So Dan did make a very good point there, but any CONCACAF team on USA soil against anybody not from the Americas is going to be a massive home field advantage. Imagine, say, Honduras does a better job of replacing their generation. It's not like they're that far behind where they couldn't find a few guys real quick and do a youth movement. But at any rate, any one of those teams, and they fill up Kansas, they fill up Arrowhead, and they're playing Latvia or something stupid.
If Latvia gets into the World Cup out of UEFA,
I don't care.
The jersey.
Okay, so Slovakia then.
We're not doing it either. That's more realistic, but we suck right now.
But the amount of people from that country
your point is valid.
It'll be so home field. You'll be like, wait, are we playing Guatemala City right now? no, this is Kansas City. City.
Another one that could be interesting, if Japan or South Korea gets assigned to Seattle.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
Or San Fran.
Yeah.
LA too.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Korea, South Korea and LA with sun still. That's
yeah.
Mm.
How old is Sun? Sun's 33. Is he 32?
No, he's not. Really?
No.
I think he's 30.
I think he's 30. You think he's
30? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's 30.
So he'll he'll probably be playing for him.
Yeah, I think 2026 is going to be his last World Cup.
Yeah.
We haven't even brought this up. It will be fun to watch the last World Cup with Ronaldo and Messi. Like, that's just going to be fun. It's the last one.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah.
We never talk about that, but it is. It's the last one with both of them. I feel safe saying that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see Messi doing kind of like the Maradona thing in 1990. It was in Italy, right? 1990 World Cup?
It was in Italy, yeah.
And I think he was like, how old was he? He was very old, but he was already out of Europe and playing, I think, for somebody in Argentina. But I mean, anyway, I mean, yeah, I don't think Ronaldo will play.
Maradona or 1990?
Yeah.
He was 30.
30.
Yeah. Never mind. Then he came to Germany back and played in 94. He came back and played in 94. Messi will turn 39 during the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah,
I could see him coming in off the bench.
Maybe.
Yeah. It all depends. It just depends on him. But I mean, Ronaldo's even older, right?
Yeah, Ronaldo will be 41. There's no way.
No way. There's no way. I mean, maybe Tom. I mean, guess Tom Brady.
Yeah, Tom Brady, 57 years old, dude.
Yeah.
He'll still be starting for somebody.
Tom Brady will be playing for the Michigan Panthers in like 20 years.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, this is fun. This is the last time that either of them will be super involved with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's a turning page.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think both our teams are good enough to make, you know, I don't know what you consider a run in the World Cup, but I mean, they could both get out of group stage for sure.
Dude, both of their teams have a legitimate chance of making quarters, let alone semis.
Mm-hmm.
In all honesty, like the way that the Diogo Jota was playing for Liverpool, and I mean, I don't know where Joao Felix was for this window, but you know, he was scoring a bunch of goals late in the season for Atletico too. And if they get that team revving, that's the thing. I think both of these guys have a better value of players around them than they've had in a while since like earlier in their career. And so either of these teams, I think, could win it. Like make a run, get to the finals, and who the fuck knows?
That's possible. I mean, once you get on a run of a couple matches, especially if you get the right draw, like anything can happen.
Yeah. Absolutely, man.
I don't know. I think if you wanted to throw a dart at Portugal, whatever their future is, it's going to be astronomically high. Wouldn't mind throwing a dart at that. Argentina's probably going to have way less odds. Still wouldn't mind betting on that. Not after that Copa America last summer.
Let's take a quick look. Argentina
wins their group. Brazil wins their group. They have the potential of meeting in the semis. So
that would
probably be the end of Argentina, in my opinion.
Most likely.
Yes.
Let's see. Argentina is plus 900 to win it, and Portugal is plus 1,200.
Yeah, I'd put a unit on both of those.
We could actually see Portugal against Brazil in on the round of 16, which would be epic.
Yeah, I like to see them play each other just because of that foreign exchange student class I had, where a bunch of them were from Brazil and most of them completely supported Ronaldo, and you could tell it was a language thing, you know, the like Portuguese thing.
Yeah, of course.
And they're like, well, it's man versus machine. So machine wins when you're that type of machine. And it's like, but it's not man versus machine. It's God versus machine. Like,
amen.
that's how I feel, yeah. You know. But
I just remember the last time they were in a group together, they also included Korea DPR, and Ronaldo and Portugal just embarrassed Korea 7-0.
It happened.
God, I can't wait.
And then the reports came out of Pyongyang that their coach had apparently been forced into a work camp or something along those lines for his failure. I think that proved to be not true, but for a few months that was the story.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild world. Wild world.
Yeah. Berhalter should be
God.
Blessings.
make Berhalter work at McDonald's.
No, Berhalter, sorry, you fucked up. You got to go work the graveyard shift at Jack in the Box.
Oh,
fucking going. That's too funny. No, hey,
World Cup to serving Jumbo Jacks.
We did just play a bunch of matches in the last like 14 days though. What's your guys' biggest takeaways from the June window? All four matches. I know we talked last week, but what's just your overall takeaway? If you got something from the last two matches, or if you got something overall, it doesn't really matter. But what's your takeaway from the window?
My biggest takeaways are I'm probably going to be fading Mexico quite a bit. And the United States had better freaking win Group B if they want to do anything in this World Cup, because the Netherlands looks scary.
Yeah, I completely agree with those. Like, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, what the Dutch did specifically to Wales, I mean – I was on the good end of it once, because that finished off a successful parlay for me that they pulled a goal just out of nowhere. And then they did it to Wales again, a week later. Like, the Netherlands, they undressed Belgium. They looked really solid in a window where they weren't even supposed to be taking it all that seriously. And yeah, I think you just do not want to see that team in the round of 16.
Yeah, Netherlands in a tournament where England looked bad, France looked bad, Belgium looked bad, Germany didn't look dominant by any means. I think Netherlands kind of put themselves – did I say France? France didn't look good.
Yeah, you mentioned France.
I think Netherlands kind of put themselves in as kind of like one of the – if not the favorite from Europe, I mean, without a doubt.
What are their odds right now? I bet they have decent odds.
Let's see. The Orange are plus 1,100. Yeah, that's pretty juicy.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, this is where it gets – they win Group A. Argentina wins their group. Brazil wins their group. They would be looking at possibly United States round of 16, possibly Argentina in the quarterfinals, possibly Brazil in the semifinals. That's where we were about where winning Group B –
You mean the three –
But, yeah,
but this actually kind of, in my opinion, this helps the bet, because if those are the three teams that you're betting on, one of those three teams is looking like it's going to make it to the finals out of this side. And if they have to play each other with how good they've been playing, mm-hmm. they're probably going to win the final.
I'm just saying, if you match them up against
Argentina or Brazil? France has not been impressive. I mean, looking at who's going to win the – yeah, if you can win Group B, then the draw is set up really nicely for you. Like, the biggest issue you might run into is the second-place team out of Spain or Germany could be a really good bet to come into that semifinal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's
I think I might be fading Belgium, and I might be making a sprinkle on Denmark.
Dude, I think Denmark is going to be the Cinderella story. I think too much from last summer is too recent, and me and Thomas have talked about it. I think we've talked about it on here even, but if we have, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to say it again. the first moment he played for his club, and he gets fouled, and the guy, or no, he fouls a guy, and the guy goes to push him into the ground after he fouls him because it was a hard foul, and he's mad because it hurt, and he goes to push him back down, pushes him, looks down at him, sees it's Christian Eriksen. He's like, oh, fuck, bro, are you okay? And then hugs him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's now that, you know, I'm not being cynical, like I'm not, don't cancel. Now that Ukraine's not in it, I think that storyline with Denmark and the way that they've been playing, I think that has a legitimate chance of being the Disney underdog type of storyline.
Yeah. I agree 100%. And I mean, that bracket that they would have, I could absolutely see Denmark making a good run at this.
See, and so that's obviously the other side of the three teams we've talked about. Mm-hmm. So we're saying that the iron sharpens iron here and Denmark makes a run here. Who wins? One of our teams.
Yeah, probably.
What's up, everybody? This is Thomas Miller. And I just wanted to let you know that the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk podcast is sponsored by Moneyline Dice. Moneyline aims to revolutionize the sports betting market through the creation of both functional and novelty products that sports bettors of all levels will enjoy. Spotted by its golden peaks, the Moneyline logo symbolizes winning, and winning big! Feature products include Moneyline Sports Betting Dice, Moneyline Sports Betting Pocket Notebook, Snapback Hat, and more. Use promo code COTA10, KOTA10, to receive a 10% discount on your next order. That's promo code COTA10, KOTA, for 10% off your next order at MoneylineDice.com. Now let's get back to the show.
So,
yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Denmark, it looks like if they can win that group and nose out France, because France did not look good at all in this window, then Denmark would have a really nice setup to possibly get through to make a run at the semifinals or even the finals.
And in all honesty, something that we haven't talked about yet on here that I think has some value to talk about is the fact that how many of the last World Cup champions have not made it out of group stages? So when you look at that and you see Denmark, well, that's a golden, the guarantee, you know, that's the team. If you want to make a big bet, them to get out of the group stage, bam, bet it. You know,
you want to make that bet on them to win the group. It's plus 275.
What's them to qualify?
Minus 200. No value there.
Right. Right. But here's the other thing. If France doesn't, who's the other team?
Australia and Tunisia. Yeah.
Tunisia. I mean,
it's difficult to see France finding a way to screw this up, but it was also difficult to see Italy finding a way to screw up a group that included Paraguay, Slovakia, and New Zealand.
Yeah, so maybe to win the group. I think you take it. I think you parlay to advance with something else that you think is going to happen, like match day one, and mm-hmm. take that two minus 200 and use it as a parlay builder, you know, in a two leg parlay to get it to plus. And then I think to win the group is the one that you just throw a dart, put a unit on.
Yeah,
I agree.
We could also look at Tunisia, are there futures to advance out of the group?
Yeah, Tunisia is plus 300 to qualify for the knockout stage.
Hmm. Way less than what I thought. Would have thought.
Yeah, I figured it'd be like plus 700.
They're plus 1800 to win the group and plus 300 to advance.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
but it's kind of making the point that we're saying is that how bad France has looked, along with the World Cup hangover thing, that is like a proven test of time that
beyond documented.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one last thing, you know, like I tried to steer that conversation. This is what I love about this is that it's genuinely just a conversation, because I tried to ask about the window and then we started talking about how the European teams are going to fair in their group stages in November, and it was okay. I loved it. But I do want to say that I know we talked halfway through the window, but there was a grit, a feistiness, a commitment to not lose. You know, there was a spirit there in that muddy El Salvador match. There was something there. I watched that, and every 7 minutes I was like, holy shit, this is what is happening? What is happening right now? What is happening? Oh my God. And you're just hanging on by your teeth, and they just don't stop fighting. Yunus Musa is just streaking down this mud-filled midfield at full fucking speed. And you're like, oh my God, is he on a horse or what? And just chaos. It was, but they refused to lose. They scored a goal. And in all honesty, I don't know what their XG was versus El Salvador's XG, but we probably should have won that match.
Yeah, we should have. But I'm not unhappy with on the point there.
No.
And like the 2018 squad loses that match, no question. Like this team has actually grown up a little bit. They have that gritty instinct that I think really the 2010 team probably embodied it the most, that this team is going to keep fighting. And this team, even when Berhalter's not making the right decisions, like at least the players are still fighting out there. And that's a big plus, which we didn't have 4 years ago.
See, and that was something I had said last week too, where when me and Thomas watch a game together, And we're talking about strategies and all this, and I go, no, dude, these guys, once their back's against the wall, they don't give a fuck what this man tells them. Yep. Honestly, every single starter on our starting 11 is a better soccer player than Berhalter ever imagined he would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And they are reaching heights beyond anything he ever did.
Yeah.
Period.
You clearly didn't see his interview from old school ESPN2 where he had just signed in Europe.
Piccoli?
Yeah, he's like a SoCal surfer dude from the 90s, man.
Bro, like, he was Piccoli meets
Sting. Yeah, so was Malibu on American Gladiators.
Yeah. I just want to say that, like, I was going to say that we just got to call that match what it was. It was un clásico from CONCACAF, El Salvador, USA, worst pitch ever we've ever seen. We always talk about bad pitches. Took a lot of heat in Spanish media. I don't know if you guys have noticed it. About complaining about the pitch since we hosted a game versus Honduras that was World Cup qualifier in, sub-zero temperatures in Canada. Yeah. Canada also hosted two games in snow, or at least two. In snow, and we both had to go down to Central America and kind of got our taste of our own medicine kind of thing, right? But that being said, I watching that game, there were multiple times where I was really impressed by our guys. Like, they didn't look like the same team that went to San Salvador last September, less than a year ago, you know? Mm-hmm. They looked like they're seasoned now. Like, they're like, you know, like, okay, like, you guys brought your switchblades. Hold up. Let's run to the bench and grab our switchblades, and we're going to have a knife fight right here in San Salvador. Dude,
that Tyler Adams moment when he pulled him down, it was like not a clear goal scoring opportunity. There was no need for a red card, and he just drew it out and got physical, got up in the guy, literally threw him to the ground, and then just started backing away. It was like, yeah, I know, I'm going to take my yellow. I'm going to take my yellow, but you're my bitch now. Yeah, like, dude, there was so many moments where that team, Pulisic was feisty. You know, we've seen him get feisty recently, but he was extra spicy. McKinney might be, you know, John. We talk about John Brooks. Sorry. We talk about John Brooks and how big of a goon he is. McKinney has completely taken that spot on this team.
Yeah, McKinney's got a lot of shithousery in him.
Pulisic, I've criticized before for not being tough, but even on that Tyler Adams play that you're talking about, he ran up as the ref is getting ready to present the yellow to Tyler Adams, stuck his shoulder right in the Salvadorian dude's chest that was fouled and who was like complaining about the foul. I mean, Pulisic impressed me a lot. Like he didn't back down. He was dirty, covered in mud. Our white jerseys, our white socks.
Dude, Musa by the end of it. Oh my God.
He ate mud.
It's funny because Musa impressed me the most, but then even when he came off, De La Torre had the assist.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you almost can't go wrong at that position anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like if we can wrap up our USA thing, I mean, if we want to, like, I don't know, maybe you guys will disagree, but I don't think we have any questions at any position. I think we have a clear starter at almost every single position. And then we have several backups that we're okay with, except for our striker. Like,
and right back.
Where?
Right back. Striker and right back.
Right back will be Dest, right?
Backup. Dest. But you said starter, backup.
Oh, well, I said some backups, you know.
Yeah.
But like, but
we don't have a backup here or a striker. Like, they're, yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that I think striker is going to end up coming down to whoever's having a good start to their season. It's going to be wild. Well, like,
and I've heard commentators say things like, you know, well, if you just don't have a nine, then just don't play a nine. And when they say things like that, it screams to me, okay, just tell Pulisic to go out there in this position and say, you're not a striker. Don't be a striker. Just play good soccer. Get a good shot opportunity. Move the ball around. You know, essentially a false nine, but with a different mentality. That could put us over the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, we saw Berhalter's comments on Haji Wright.
That was
we talked. We talked about it before the game, even all three of us in our chat, that he was setting him up to fail. And he failed, and then he called him out for the fail. I mean, any striker that was put in that situation that game, we all knew, even without knowing that it was going to be the worst pitch we ever seen in our entire lives, and we all watched CONCACAF matches like nonstop.
We talked about haunted houses. We talked about haunted houses and shit the week before, and then this was literally a mud fight.
It was a mud fight, and then he said that Haji Wright, he had expectations that he was going to go out there and be like a stone cold killer, and he wasn't. He didn't show it. I mean, how many strikers have we ran out there where he didn't criticize like that? It's just weird how they get, like, whoever it is, you know, if it's him, if it's United States Soccer Federation that just like decides that they don't like somebody for whatever reason. Like, it just sucks. Like, I don't think Haji Wright should be written off. Wordplay right there. Just because of that bad game. I mean, you know, there was no offense till the second half. When we went down to 10 men, we looked like a completely different team.
Mm-hmm.
We went up 10 men, and then all of a sudden we were like, oh yeah, let's go play soccer again. But so, I mean, any other thoughts?
I mean, I think it's nice to actually see this U.S. team showing some real fight.
Yeah,
as that game wound down, we started to take more and more control of it. We started flexing our muscle a little bit. We were getting plenty of good looks down the stretch. That red card came, and then it felt good, you know. You gave up an early stupid goal, which is an indictment on Horvath, you know, because Sean Johnson played like he was on his own, you know, standing on his head. And
what was he going to – I mean, I don't fault Horvath for that goal. Like, he didn't – he thought he was going to cross it, and he shot it. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I guess you can fault him if you want, but I personally will not.
Right. And I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just for talking point purposes, but we didn't back down. And the more they puffed their chest out and tried to waste time up 1-0, the more we flexed our muscles and pushed back. And the more we pushed back, the better chances we got, scored a goal, came away with a point, biggest goal differential in the group, leading the group.
Yes.
Yep.
Leading. Not leading the group, by the way. El Salvador is leading. No, El Salvador is leading the group. They played three games already.
So what? They're how many points?
They're on 7.
7, and we're on 4?
No, they're on 6, and we're on 4. Sorry.
Okay, so if we win,
they're on 5, we're on 4.
Okay, well,
I'm going to get there.
Hey, so as long as we don't lose, we're in first place because we have better goals.
Correct, yes.
With a game in hand, we're the best team.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're the best team out of Granada, El Salvador, and the United States. Yes.
Yes.
Yay.
I'm just saying. Anyways, yeah. All right, let's go ahead and get to our picks.
Yeah. Let's get to our picks. By the way, guys, my picks are brought to you by Mi Canton plantain strips Maduro. They're like chips, but they're plantains. They're great. It's a free ad, Mi Canton. Need to start supporting Gabacho Borracho US Soccer Talk podcast. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. All right. I'm jumping off the deep end. I am officially in fully depressed mode. This is the first year of my life, which I give a lot of credit to you guys. I give a lot of credit to Thomas. And I give a lot of credit to you too, Dan. I have not ever in my life watched this much soccer. In fact, the only time I've ever watched soccer in a concentrated enough period of time and amount of hours was World Cups. And I expanded that amount of time into a season for the first time in my life. A full season, waking up on the weekends early in the morning, watching EPL, watching all 5 of the big leagues, tournaments, blah, blah, blah. And we're finally to the point where all of the major markets are closed. And it coincides with college football being off season, which is an automatic depressed mode for me. I have to go MLS, and I hate it. I don't like betting the MLS. But we're going to try. First one I'm going to play, and I believe I have 6. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 5 games, and I'm playing 2 2-leg parlays and a 5-leg parlay and a straight. But I'm playing them all as straights too, so I'll just start off with one that's a straight bet by itself, and I'm going to take Seattle Sounders money line at home against LAFC. Seattle feels like they're taking things more seriously now. Tournaments are over. They're back on the MLS focus. They've gotten the ship righted. They look pretty well. They're at home. Seattle just got announced as a World Cup location, so maybe more fans will show up just for that. 125, I'll put a unit on that.
Yeah, I like that play.
I like it too. LAFC, maybe the best team in the league, but without a doubt, completely possible. I actually, you know, if it was like a pool where you had to pick a winner, I think I would pick Seattle. I wanted to say too, Corey, you don't got to stay depressed for much longer. Only 2 days from now, the U20 CONCACAF Championships kick off. So USA plays in 2 days. Or under 20s. And this includes Olympic qualifying and the under 20 World Cup next year. So it's a pretty big tournament and a lot of, you know, very, very, very solid young talents can be playing in this tournament. Probably not to go into this World Cup for the senior league side, but you know, 2026 kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, okay. My first play in the MLS, I'm going to stick with your Seattle and LAFC. I'm just going to play the over one and a half total. I think that's super safe. I would probably almost be down to play like almost over 3.5. But I'm going to play that along with the Columbus Crew money line versus Charlotte. Charlotte is kind of almost a automatic fade away from home. Very solid at home, but they away from home, they're kind of an automatic fade. So the over 1.5 between Seattle and LAFC plus Columbus Crew money line plus 116.
Yeah, I think that makes some good amount of sense.
Good amount of sense.
All right. So for my first play, I'm actually going to touch on that Columbus Charlotte match as well. I'm going to play Columbus to win and over 2.5 goals because Charlotte, even though they're not winning when they go on the road, they are scoring. So I think that this is going to be a situation where Columbus picks up a couple goals. I could play this as both score at plus 240, which is also – which. Actually, I think I'm going to go ahead and do that because that's the better play. Columbus and over 2.5 is plus 155. So, yeah, I like Columbus to win and both score at plus 240 in this one.
Right on. Both riding with Columbus.
Yep.
B-Russ.
At this rate, I'll be lucky if Will and I are still on speaking terms some at the end of the season with how often I've faded Charlotte on the road.
Yeah. Not your fault that they can't win on the road.
I know. I take them when they play at home.
All right. So this is what I'm going to do. I have four more line items, but I have two-leg parlays. So I'm going to play the two-leg parlay.
Okay.
Also know that I'm betting a unit on the straight bet as well.
Sure.
And I'm taking both teams to score in the Red Bull, New York Red Bull and Toronto FC match. If you just go look at how many goals they've given up and scored over the last five matches and against each other, it just screams goals on both sides.
Yep.
And then I'm going to parlay that with the Chicago Fire and DC United over 2.5. Again, just go look at it. You know, it Chicago's defense isn't what it was. DC on the road gives up goals. This just screams over 2.5. That's plus 239, which is amazing. Both teams to score is minus 105. Over 2.5 is minus 135. Playing them in the straights and as a parlay.
Yeah, I like that.
I got to. Okay, I'm up, right?
Yep.
All right, I'm going to fade two teams in MLS. I'm going to fade FC Cincinnati on the road. I'm going to fade Minnesota United on the road. FC Cincinnati takes on Philadelphia Union. Cincinnati's a lot better this year than they were last year. They're pretty solid on the road, but Philadelphia Union is one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. That one's about minus 165. Same thing, Revolution, kind of like they're almost – kind of similar to what Seattle has done, where I think they're a lot better than what they played, and they're just going to keep getting better. Minnesota United, not great on the road, not great in general. Those two play together is at plus 157.
Yeah, I like it. All right. So for my next one, I am going to ride with Atlanta to win. I don't know how aggressive I'm going to be yet because I want to see Miami's starting lineup before I actually decide whether I'm going to take Atlanta to win to nil or take Atlanta and both teams to score, because this is a situation where it's really who do I trust least, Atlanta's defense or Miami's offense, because Atlanta isn't stopping anybody, but there is the possibility that Miami is not going to be at full strength because of getting players back from the window. Leonardo Campana plays with Ecuador's national team. He's their leading scorer with 6 goals. Robert Taylor scored in Miami's past 2 matches, but he was off playing with Finland on this window. So if both of them are not in the starting 11, even against Atlanta's defense, I don't see Miami finding the net. So if both of them are sitting, then I'm going to back Atlanta to win to nil at plus 155. If Campana especially is in the starting 11, then I'll take Atlanta to win and both score at plus 200. But either way, I think Atlanta is going to come out with a win here. Miami has not been a good road team all year. The Herons have 1 win away, and it was against Seattle when the Sounders were clearly not taking MLS matches anywhere near as seriously as CONCACAF Champions League. So I feel pretty good about fading Miami on the road.
Yeah, I like that.
Is that a Saturday night game, Dan?
That is a Sunday at 3 p.m.
Right. Could you make sure to tweet out? I guess we'll all pay attention to the Miami starting 11 and see what they go with, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an very interesting take. I like your pick.
Yep. I kind of fucked this up. I fucked this up when I put these bets in. Damn it. I wanted to take Real Salt Lake money line at home against San Jose. Home team has won 4 out of the last 5. Salt Lake's a better team. San Jose sucks away from home. It's only minus 120. I was going to parlay that with the FC Dallas Vancouver match, but looks like I accidentally parlayed it with the Sounders match that I already played. That's plus 312. I think Seattle pulls it off. But if you didn't even do that, it'd still be like plus 170-ish, somewhere in there. But I'm playing all those as straights. And those two parlays.
All right, so you wanted FC Dallas plus what?
Minus 190.
But what did you mean to play?
I meant to play a money line parlay with Dallas and Salt Lake.
I got that at plus 170.
There you go. I said plus 180.
Yeah, right. Yeah, minus 200. It might have dropped. For FC Dallas, you had it minus 190, so.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow, plus 170 is great.
Yeah.
Seattle, too, I think, like, you know, you're going to tie him into 2 picks, but it could happen, definitely. The last one I have is I have a way too early World Cup pick, and I'm going to go with a team that you guys mentioned as a possible dark horse, Denmark to win 2-0 against Tunisia. That on its own is at minus 110. And then I'm going to take that combined with Spain to win 2-0 versus Costa Rica. Those two played together is plus 218. So get your pick in now because it's only approximately 100 and something days away.
Nicely played.
There you go.
All right. So for this next one, I feel like Pace should be on paying attention to this spot specifically because I'm going deep into the weeds here. And I am going to take Racing Louisville double chance in the National Women's Soccer League at minus 115. So Racing Louisville is playing at Washington. And they're about to go into a international window for the women for the CONCACAF Women's Championship so that the U.S. women's team can officially qualify for the 2023 Women's World Cup. And Washington has a large number of players who are going to be playing with the U.S. So right now, their focus is probably on staying healthy for this tournament as opposed to winning this mid-season match with Louisville. And on top of that, the Spirit have not been playing well at all lately. I think they've gotten 2 points out of their past 5 matches. So they really shouldn't be as big of a favorite as they are. Racing Louisville, minus 115, double chance, I think holds a lot of value. And that is a Friday night game.
I mean, there you go. That's like a pay special. Women's sports.
Women's sports deep into the weeds.
Way deep into the weeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as I don't know if you mentioned it on the show, but you mentioned it to us, USA at least has to leave the United States to qualify.
That they do.
Yeah.
First time in 16 years, I think.
It's all played in Monterrey, right? Monterrey. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So that'd be interesting.
Yep.
Well, I'm fresh out of picks. I parlayed all of my line items together. It's plus 2,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have another one that isn't on the board yet, but I will be playing it when it does go. So I'm going to play – this is out of the USL. I'm going to take Louisville City to win against Orange County. Orange County has just been a complete wreck. I mean, they're next to last in the Western Conference. They've been hemorrhaging goals. Their past four road matches, three of which they've given up at least three goals. So I think Louisville could rain some goals down on this one. And then I'm going to pair that with Tampa Bay and Charleston over 2.5 goals, because Tampa Bay is seeing both teams score almost every time it takes the pitch. Like, looking at this, Tampa Bay's past 9 games in the USL Championship, eight of them have seen both teams find the net. Charleston scored 6 goals in its past 2 matches, so I think at least 3 goals is very likely in this setup. I don't know what that parlay is going to come out at. I'm guessing it'll probably play around plus 200 when those lines do go on the board, and those will definitely be on my card.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Yeah. I got one more. Hold on. But I go ahead and anything you guys want to talk about for a second. I got to find this real quick.
Oh, no. I'm good. I'm out of picks. I'm good. This is the amount I'm willing to try on an MLS.
Yeah, Corey, I think you actually have more MLS plays than I do.
I don't like doing this to begin with, and I did a full one. So,
yeah. I mean, if this goes wrong, I mean, time to start following like the Scandinavian leagues.
Hey, if this goes wrong, there might be like a 3-week stretch where you just don't see me.
Yeah, I mean, KTP is playing on Saturday, so that might be worth something.
Yeah. But I'm saying we're down to our like slowest slow point we're going to see.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
I mean, now that we're out of the window.
Yeah.
And the Indiana team we're facing has lost 4 in a row. Yes, we've got a good shot at this.
All right, I couldn't find all I wanted to find on this, but I got one more play. July 2nd. Who knows if we record before then, right? That's only 2 weeks away, pretty much. Liga MX kicks off July 1st, by the way.
Oh, nice.
They have their – I cannot even remember the exact name, but I believe it's the Campeón de Campeones. Like, it's like –
Champion of Champions?
Yeah, like Atlas plays somebody. I think it's Pachuca in Los Angeles on, I believe, June 30th. And then on July 2nd, Atlas then has to go to Estadio Azteca and play America. Right now, America's plus 100 money line in that game. So they're going to play a big money game, big TV game, a couple days before, and then have to open up their Apertura season at America. So I'm going to take America money line plus 100 right there. Even money.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. And on that topic, do we know if we're going to record in the next few weeks, or are we going to take a break?
I kind of want to take a couple weeks off. Kind of do.
Right, well, in case we do, then I'm going to throw this on because this might be the only chance I get to bet them. I'm going to throw in KTP at plus 195 because why the heck not?
Whatever the odds are on Union Omaha winning the whole damn thing. Give me a unit on that. Whatever that is, if we don't record for a few weeks, just give me that.
Yeah.
There you go. But yeah, we're coming off from a rather impressive 4-0 performance last match, and the team we're facing has dropped 4 in a row. If we win this match, I think we'd be a point out of first place. So yeah, I'll take KTP Moneyline plus 195 for Saturday morning.
Right. I'm going to go ahead and take the over 51 on Nebraska and Northwestern, League Zero.
At least mine was a soccer play.
I'm going to take Purdue under 7.5 wins.
Under 7.5? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing.
Hmm.
I'm going to take – so what I'm going to do – what I'm going to do is I'm going to take Purdue under 7.5 at minus money and then take Iowa over 7.5 at plus money. And Northwestern over 4.5 at minus money.
You might want to save this for the college football podcast. I'm just saying.
You guys went way out there. I've been good for a minute. You guys started going way out there. I was like, okay, well, let's go.
What do you mean I went way out there? Finnish soccer is still soccer.
What was the first one you said?
You guys went a completely different sport.
Oh, Purdue under 7.5. Yeah,
Purdue, you're going under.
That's what the Vegas line is, 7.5
minus 120.
Yeah, like my support of KTP is well established at this point.
I'm just saying, 51 point over under. Nebraska might get 51 on its own.
Unless,
right, Corey,
and then give up a punt return to lose 52-51.
I didn't say it.
This is why you bet Thomas's bet, and then you also bet Northwestern over 4.5. Because if they win that first game, they're guaranteed winning 5.
Probably true.
I mean, could be. Ireland, let's do it. We're taking Gabacho Huaracho on the road to Ireland, Dublin, Ireland, to watch the Nebraska-Northwestern game.
No, but we
face is paying for it.
we very well might be doing a live stream for a couple of World Cup matches this year. So
yeah,
it is Black something Friday worth looking forward to.
I mean, heck, if either one of your teams makes on the Big Ten championship, that would be a very interesting live stream to do here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
With that, I think we can let him go.
All right. So stay tuned for our Wisconsin Ohio State Big Ten Championship live stream. Just kidding. I mean, probably not. But yeah, I mean, thanks for joining us. It's been kind of a totally fun show, right? Pretty wild show. I had a good time. So thanks for joining us, and
come for the soccer, stay for the random college football.
Hey, if you're gonna have me around, it's gonna end up getting it's inevitable. No matter what happens, if you have me around long enough, we're gonna talk college football.
We are.
Yep.
North Texas over under wins. Oh,
what's it at?
It's at. God. All right. Sorry. Let's do it, everyone. New Mexico State over 3.
Nope, under.
Not taking it. North Texas. What's North Texas?
I thought you were legit going to say New Mexico State under 0.5.
All right, here's one. Florida State, 6.5.
Over.
Don't want to touch it.
I think they're going over. They can't stay down forever.
ACC's not good enough.
Yeah,
that's right. What they said about us.
All right. That was fun. See you guys next week or sometime soon. Bye.
Hey, shout out Coda Cappers.
Yep.
Love everybody.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. See you guys. Bye.